Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply.
All right. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Paddock Project. I'm your host, Tiggy, and I'm here today with someone who I think has become the most regular guest of the podcast at this point, Kim Wilson, Director of Sustainability at McLaren Racing. Kim, I think we can almost call you a co-host at this point. Welcome back. Oh, I hope you've been well.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I'm sad we're doing this virtually instead of at MTC like last time, but we are here today to talk about a very exciting announcement, a first of its kind circularity handbook produced by McLaren in collaboration with Deloitte and the FIA. So I'm really excited to dive in and chat about that. Congrats, first of all.
Thank you.
Must be a lot
much.
Of work to get that out.
It certainly was. It's been a good couple of years in the making.
Wow.
So I'm incredibly proud of the team, the perseverance, the collaboration between us and Deloitte, the involvement of the other teams and the FIA. It's been a true collaborative effort, and that's something we should all be proud of as we mark this particular milestone in our circularity journey.
Yes. And the more we can collaborate on sustainability, the better. So maybe let's start for listeners, especially who might not be as aware of all the terms. How do you define circularity, especially in the context of an F1 car?
Okay, so maybe to start off with, McLaren Racing, back in 2022, actually, we set ourselves an ambition, a bit of a moonshot, to research and develop a circular Formula One car. So what do we mean by that? We essentially wanted to look at the materials that go into making a Formula One car and make sure that they, instead of the traditional linear model of a take, make, dispose approach to the use of materials, taking them from the earth, from the environment, making something and throwing it away, we wanted to introduce more circularity into it. So what that means is just really closing the loop, if you like, of the beginning and the end of the process, and keeping materials in value in circulation for as long as possible, so that we're not continually taking from the planet's finite resources. But it also gives us the real benefit in terms of resilience of supply chains and hopefully reducing cost and reducing waste as well. So in the context of Formula One, we've really put the boundary in this particular first step in this piece of work around what all of the Formula One teams have direct control over. And that is the materials that come into our factories to design and make our Formula One car across a season. And so it's a measure of the materials coming in and then the materials going out of our factory at the end of the season.
Amazing. And when it comes to sustainability, there can be so many different priorities. What made you choose to focus on circularity as a priority for sustainability efforts in F1? I know some of what you said answers that partially, but I'm curious why you zeroed in on circularity as the main goal.
So from an environmental impact perspective, there's one piece, which is, of course, our carbon footprint, the greenhouse gas emissions that we generate to be able to operate as a team and to do all of our activities. When you actually zoom in on this, and this is very common across all industries and organizations, the vast majority of our impact sits in our supply chain. And to be able to achieve our net zero commitment, so we have to address the materials that we use. So there's a dual benefit, but we're also in the space of finite resources. So we need to be able to think about how can we be more resilient to supply chain disruption, and how can we deliver what we do, but in a way that has a lighter footprint on the planet than the resources that we use.
Absolutely. And maybe not very sustainability related at the moment, but supply chain is very much on our mind in the US at the moment. So we're thinking a lot about supply chain resiliency and all of that currently. But to the circularity handbook in particular, what does that aim to achieve? Who is it for? How do you hope teams use it? Talk to us a little bit about about the purpose?
Yeah, so we did a piece of research with our partner Deloitte back in the summer of 2024 now, and we looked at what it would take to look across the F1 ecosystem and achieve this ambition of a circular Formula One car. And what was absolutely clear was that we're quite far behind the curve as a community, as a society, in measuring circularity. And as we all know, what gets measured gets managed, and we can therefore drive positive change. And that's something we have to take from Formula One as a really positive learning, is it taking a data-driven, evidenced approach to the levers that we can pull to reduce our impacts and to innovate and drive positive change. What we do on track in terms of pushing the limits of engineering and high performance is really relevant to sustainability as well. And, you know, if you think about where McLaren came from to winning the championship last year, that's been a constant process of learning and improvement and failing fast and taking the best of what we've got forward. And we've got to learn to do that more in the space of sustainability. So what we decided that we needed to do, and we reported our findings to our regulator, the FIA, was we needed to develop a common way of measuring this across our sport, so that we could then look at it as a way of each team taking their own specific circumstances, because we're all slightly different, but where we are all common in that we do within the regulations develop and build the chassis for the car. So we can all measure that, we can all drive improvements within the regulations, within control, our own control as a team, and drive that positive performance. But we can also collectively look at where are the common challenges across our sport, and we can work with the regulator to say, actually, you know what? We shouldn't have to choose between innovating and investing in sustainability. We should be able to, you know, especially in a cost cap environment where it might mean that we're spending money on sustainability and more expensive materials in the R&D phase rather than on track performance. So let's create a level playing field, and let's look at how we can influence driving regulation change. And that then has the benefit of demonstrating the art of the possible. That's what we do in Formula One. Yeah. We're pioneering and we're innovating, but it's not just for our sport. It can be translated into the automotive industry and beyond.
Yeah, no, I love that. And you talked a little bit about innovation and how Formula One, you're pushing the boundaries on track, off track. Is there any sort of risk that circular practices compromise performance in any way? Or is the goal really to show that they can coexist? How do you balance kind of the risk of those two things and make sure that performance is still top of mind, but you're just doing it maybe in a slightly different way or with a slightly different lens?
So the thing about the handbook and this measure is what we're doing is we're measuring the circular qualities of the materials that are going into our process and what proportion of the total materials in our circular plus the proportion of the materials that are coming out that are deemed to be circular. And I'm not going to reveal the number now. You'll have to wait for our next sustainability report in about a month. But yeah, we have ourselves as a team applied the handbook and that measure so that we can test whether or not this is something that is worth passing on to others, and we can iron out a few kinks. But what we have discovered is we won the championship last year, and actually we have a not insignificant amount of circularity practices already in the way we operate as a team, and I'm sure all the other teams will do so as well. And it's because as a society we are doing relatively well in terms of recycling our waste. But we also know we've got big opportunities to look more at the input side and the sustainability qualities of the materials going into our design and our manufacturing of a Formula One car. You know, we trialed recycled carbon fiber in Austin at the USGP in 2023, and again at Silverstone in 2024. And there are materials out there, but we certainly know there are greater opportunities to do that. But where the regulations come in is that we need to make sure that we're not compromising on cost, and we're not compromising on safety and on track performance. So this is about creating a level playing field, but taking a very data-led approach to being able to prove the evidence over time, and then ultimately see whether we can influence the fact that you can create and have a great car on track that performs and keep raising the bar, but we do so in a way that isn't uncompetitive.
Yeah, I mean, that's the best proof there is being constructors champion and having arguably the fastest car on the grid while also doing this at the same time. I think that's the best argument out there. So kudos to you. You mentioned cost cap a little bit. I'm curious how
Yes.
you balance some of these circularity efforts with cost cap constraints. You said you don't compromise on cost and on safety and those things, but how do you think about balancing that in a cost cap environment?
So actually, if you go back to 2023, we as a team were really clear in calling out the fact that when the cost cap was developed for Formula One, for no reason other than it wasn't front of mind, sustainability wasn't factored into the cost cap rules. And so we worked with the teams and the regulator to undo that so that we didn't have to make a choice between sustainability and on-track performance. So there now are aspects of our financial regulations where we can invest in sustainability, and that's been able to unlock the fantastic partnership that we've had with Deloitte to be able to get to the stage we are now. But the other piece is that the FIA runs this program on many things. You can see it across technical aspects of the car where teams are able to, they might ask a team to volunteer or a group of teams to volunteer to invest in some sort of trial or improvement on behalf of the sport. And that's what we've been able to do here, is that the FIA commissioned this work that we could invest in with Deloitte outside of the cost cap. And then the deal being that we do the work, but we share all of the findings with the rest of the teams and the rest of the sport so that we can all benefit from the results of it.
Yeah,
And we'll
that
have
makes
more projects down the line, hopefully over the year, as we now start to think about opportunities to implement the findings of our measurement.
collaboration is the key. Whether you're traveling, advancing your career, or just love learning, speaking a new language opens up incredible opportunities, and Rosetta Stone makes it easier and more immersive than ever. I've been on a French learning journey for years, and I'm gearing up to go to the Monaco Grand Prix this year, so I'm trying to improve as much as possible before that. But one of the hardest things can be perfecting pronunciation. But Rosetta Stone has built-in true accent speech recognition technology that provides real-time feedback, which has helped me sound much more natural. It's like having a personal language coach guiding your accent every step of the way. Don't wait, unlock your language learning potential now. Paddock Project listeners can grab Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. That's unlimited access to 25 language courses for life. Visit rosettastone.com/today to get started and claim your 50% off today. Don't miss out. Go to rosettastone.com/today and start learning today. Even if you think it's a bit overhyped, AI is suddenly everywhere, from customer service to Formula Auto racing. If it's not in your industry yet, it's coming fast. But AI needs a lot of speed and computing power, so how do you compete without costs spinning out? Time to race to the next generation of the cloud, Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is a blazing fast and secure platform for your infrastructure, database, application development, plus all your AI and machine learning workloads. OCI costs 50% less for compute and 80% less for networking. That is a lot of prize money. Thousands of businesses have already upgraded to OCI, including Vodafone, Thomson Reuters, and Suno AI. Right now, Oracle is offering to cut your current cloud bill in half if you move to OCI for new U.S. customers with minimum financial commitment. Offer ends May 31st. See if your company qualifies for this special offer at oracle.com/paddock. That's oracle.com/paddock. Has the last F1 race got your stress levels through the roof? It might actually not be Ferrari's strategy or papaya rules. It might actually be your hormones. That's where Happy Mammoth comes in. They offer a free 2-minute quiz that can help you uncover the root cause of your hormonal symptoms. It's super easy. Just answer a few questions about what you're going through and where you're at in life. And the best part, after taking the quiz, you'll get a personalized recommendation to help balance your hormones and start feeling better. I personally took the quiz, and one of the recommendations I got was to start Hormone Harmony, which helps with bloating, fatigue, weight gain, and more. And after adding it to my routine, I've definitely noticed a difference. So ready to start feeling like yourself again? Head over to happymammoth.com and take their free 2-minute hormone quiz today to find the ultimate answer to your stubborn hormonal issues. And for a limited time, you can also get 15% off your entire first order with my code PATICKPROJECT at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use code PATICKPROJECT for 15% off today. A Formula One chassis is incredibly complex, and I feel like there must be a lot of challenges in developing a standardized metric to some degree for something that has so many parts. And as you mentioned, teams are developing under the same regulations, but every team is a little bit different. Every chassis is a little bit different and has different inputs, different teams behind them. What were the challenges in coming up with a metric that works for the sport more broadly?
So, to be honest, from our perspective at McLaren, part of it was we don't necessarily have all of the data in place, but we're measuring weight. And it, unless it ends up on the car, a team might not necessarily think about that. And I think the thing that people may not realize is what you see on the car is a tiny fraction of all the materials that go into the modeling and the rapid prototyping and the development and the manufacture of the car. But each team does, you know, has different elements that they do in-house versus what they might sort of outsource. So we've had to work on creating a boundary, but we did involve the other teams to workshop our thinking as we went through the process so that we could try and address all the different nuances of how a different team might apply this. And this is a version one. it will, you know, we're having a go at applying it. Other teams hopefully will voluntarily adopt it too. And then as a result, we'll probably need to iterate and upgrade and you know, tweak the way we measure.
Yeah. Have there ever been concerns about giving away trade secrets throughout this process? Have you had to be careful about how much you're sharing and where you're collaborating?
There's always that element of competition within Formula One. And that's, you know, one of the things that we do have to think about, but this is supposed to be pre-competitive and that's why it's very much a methodology. So very similar to anyone who's listening to this, who might have had, well, it depends how you look at it, but they've got to apply the greenhouse gas protocol in terms of how you do your carbon accounting. This is a manual. This is a guidance document that helps you figure out how to gather your data, how to collect it, how to make data assumptions, how to draw your boundaries, and it sets some criteria for what is credible in deeming a circular versus what isn't. And we'll keep updating that as the industry evolves and the way we measure this evolves over time. So we're just about 20 years behind on circularity accounting versus carbon accounting. So we've got some way to go, but this is an important first step and it draws on the best practice out there for the global circularity protocol that I believe is going to be launched at COP30 later this year.
Wow, that's so exciting. I guess relatedly, is there a long-term ambition for this to extend beyond F1, beyond motorsport into other industries more broadly?
So I think this is a start for our sport, and I would actually reiterate that this is for the chassis, so it doesn't include the tires and the power unit because that's outside the control of the teams. But so maybe it could extend laterally to those parts of the F1 ecosystem. It can extend to wider motorsport. But absolutely, the automotive industry is possibly a logical next step, and we'll see how we can maybe look at how it dovetails into the global circularity protocol. And in the same way that for carbon accounting, you have different industry nuances and versions, maybe it will come into that space as well. But I think if you're going to innovate and prove the art of the possible, if you can do it in Formula One, then hopefully it definitely translates into other industries.
Yeah, absolutely. So you were chatting a little bit about the methodology behind calculating a team circularity score. From what you can tell us, maybe in a little more detail, would love to hear about that methodology and how you've thought about that.
So literally we're taking all the materials that come into McLaren or into a team's factory, and we're looking at how much it weighs. And then we're looking at what of those coming in would be deemed to have circular quality. So, for example, are they bio-based materials? Mm-hmm. Are they renewable, recycled content? And so you're taking a percentage weight of that, and then you're adding it to the other end of the equation, which is what comes out of the factory at the moment, mainly in terms of waste. But again, when you look at the weight of how much you are sending out to waste, how much of it can be is being recycled or reused? So going up what we call the R ladder in terms of waste management for those who are familiar, and then you get a percentage as your result. And what you can do then is look at what can we do to improve the either reduce the denominator or the numerator. And the other thing we can do is look at internal circularity, so it's not just so that we might be able to take materials that we're using internally and reuse them. Mm-hmm. So that we can affect the measure as well. So that's what we're trying to do. Yeah. And ultimately use less materials and use materials that are more recycled content, more bio-based, and keep those in higher value.
Yeah. And I know a lot of this, as you said, circularity accounting is quite new, but is there a benchmark of kind of success in this world? Like if you're 50% circular and you have that score, like, is that a good thing? Or what sort of numbers are we thinking about in terms of success?
Aspirationally, we want to get to as close as 100 to 100 as possible, as quickly as possible. So I think really, rather than making it competitive across teams, because it's not that comparable given the nuances of what we all do, what we really want to achieve is self-competition. So driving, adopting that culture of continuous improvement. So looking at, okay, this is our baseline measure. We're going to have two angles to this. One is how to improve the quality of our data, but the other angle is how can we move the dial on that measure in terms of the actions and the activities that we have to improve the use of circular materials. What I don't want us to get into is an exercise of better maths. So we don't want to over-focus on improving the quality of measurement and then taking benefits in the measure and the percentage of circularity just from that. I'd hope that that's, everyone recognises that's a little bit disingenuous in the same way that it is for carbon accounting. So we might want to re-baseline, but having quality data that helps us take data-led decisions that then enable us to improve the circularity of our own team's performance, as well as then using that evidence to help raise the bar within our sport, is super important.
Yeah. And do you hope or envision that this handbook will at all influence technical regulations in the sport in the future?
That would be my hope. Mm-hmm. I think the reality is we're coming to new regulations in 2026. So we're really looking at the period between now and 2030, where we can be using the data that we gather across the teams to look and special projects with the FIA to look at what are the opportunities we have to use more circular materials. And so ultimately, I think the more likely outcome is that we might see something in the 2030 regulations, but ultimately it is trying to use regulations to create a level playing field for all teams and to improve the standard across the sport. And then that way, if everybody has to use the same material for a certain part, because then that's great, but also getting the regulations to incentivize or reward more circular performance would be a great way to drive positive innovation, because that's what we love to do in our sport.
Absolutely. And through these years of research and studying different types of materials and their circularity, do you have a favorite material that has come out of this process?
We're very early in our journey, obviously. Carbon fiber, McLaren was the first team to use carbon fiber on the car. That's now widely adopted in the automotive industry. We've started trialing recycled carbon fiber, and so I'd love to see us continue on that journey. But there are some materials that are already out there, so that we just have to get better at working with our supply chain. So metals is an obvious space to look at as well, and how we can move the dial both on circularity and on decarbonisation at the same time. That would be fantastic.
Amazing. Well, Kim, this is so exciting. I'm really excited to see more, especially in the sustainability report next month. And congratulations again on years of work and the announcement finally being out there. I'm sure it feels good. And I'm excited to learn more and more and more.
Thank you so much. It's a really lovely moment to pause and recognize, you know, the outcome of some really great collaboration and hard work. But there is definitely more that we need to keep pushing forward in the future. So the endeavors yes. don't stop, but it's really great to be able to mark this this particular milestone.
Well, that's how you know you're on the right path. More work to do, but a lot done already. So Kim, thank you. Really appreciate
it. Thank you.
If you're looking for legit ways to make extra money, you've got to check out The Side Hustle Show. With hundreds of actionable episodes to choose from, you'll learn what's working now from real people making real money, like the Utah mom who built a six-figure business playing video games, or the guy earning $3,000 a month renting out mobility scooters. Online or offline, from Amazon to your own hometown, from YouTube to vending machines, The Side Hustle Show has you and your wallet covered. Subscribe to The Side Hustle Show wherever you're listening to this podcast and increase your earning power today.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365 because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. TNCs apply.